Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Lila Dar. Lila Dar took sannyas in 1977 and is a former plastic surgeon. Lila Dar obtained the medical license during his time in Rajneeshpuram, Oregon, and then trained as a therapist in Switzerland, where he currently lives. I'm so happy to have Lila Dar on the show, and I hope you enjoyed. Lila Dar, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I hope you too.
To start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, it's a long story. In those days, I was still working as a plastic surgeon in my own office at Zurich. And I had a lot of problems, psychological problems. And I went from one group to the other. And finally, I arrived in near Munich in Germany. And there at the center called SIST, which was run by a guy called Bündig. And there I heard for the first time from Osho. They were having talks of him early before we started with therapies. And there I was totally shocked because this guy who had this funny Indian English, he said, fighting creates hell. And because I was, as a surgeon, continually fighting and running with a knife against people, I was really touched. So I came eventually to Pune and met him there in 77.
As you mentioned, at the time when you arrived to Osho, by profession, you were a plastic surgeon. And I understand that Osho spoke about your work publicly in a discourse in relation to changing sex. Would you like to share with us what Osho said about that?
Well, he mentioned it several times. It was more or less funny, but then also he was quite serious about it, that people should do everything to get to know themselves. And one of the means was to change the sex. And then he always added, so go to Lila Dar and he will take care of it.
Would you like to expand a little bit more in your understanding what Osho meant? You know, was he literally inviting people to change sex and come to you? Or was there a deeper meaning?
Yeah, I guess, as I said, this was probably just the funny part. And the main thing was to really get to know oneself and eventually get to know that there is no sex and there is no address to one. It's just being this poor nothingness. But that takes a long, long time. And I guess I'm still on the way to it.
Okay, yeah, no, because considering what is happening now, there are lots of people who change sex because of the technology or surgery is available. But I guess if I'm correct, I don't think that that was Osho meant literally, but he was talking about going beyond sexuality. Is that, in your understanding, what Osho was pointing at?
I guess so. When I was doing actually sex change, I got to know many people who wanted to change their sexes. And my understanding was more and more, it's just an extreme form of not accepting what you are. And whether you don't accept that you are a woman or a man, or whether you don't accept that you have some lack of whatever, it basically is the same. And the thing behind will always be accept what is. And that was the message from Osho to me, and I guess to all the sannyasins.
Okay. I heard a rumor. I don't know if it's true. Did you have people, sannyasins in the commune coming to you asking to change sex?
No, it never happened. So they all realized it was just a joke. But I did a lot of surgery, of course. I did it in Zurich. I had my own private office. I was still connected to the University of Zurich. There I worked with a psychologist, psychiatrist, and they sent me people to change.
After you became a sannyasin, have you did any surgery for helping people to change sex?
Yes, I mean, I was still 2 years. I was still doing my surgery trip in Zurich while I was already going to Pune in winter for 2 months. So in those days, I did a surgery change in a private hospital.
Okay. And then you stopped after that. I'm just trying to understand if taking sannyas and being with Osho and getting into a path of...
Yeah, that was not just for the question of sex change, but as a plastic surgery, I was involved in cosmetic surgery, you know, in trying to make people women more beautiful, etc. And I more and more realized that this was not the thing. But even more important was my personal development, that I realized I couldn't go on with this type of job and I had to change myself. So eventually I also left my family with my kids and went to Pune.
Well, that's quite courageous, considering that it's a very lucrative business, which, you know, is just growing more and more.
Really courageous. It was not the courage. I just had to do it. Either I would commit suicide or I would do something.
I see. Okay, so let's jump ahead a few years and let's talk about the time when you were in Oregon with Osho in Rajneeshpuram. I understand at some point a medical center was set up called Pythagoras, and you were asked to get a license to be a practicing doctor according to the Oregonian law at the time. I think it was 1983. Can you talk us through that time?
Well, it was actually, I guess I was asked to come to the ranch because of being a surgeon, and because the commune needed somebody to do that type of work, and Sheila intended to have everything there on the ranch. So I came to the ranch, and pretty soon, I guess after 2 months, accidents happened, and I was asked to help, but it was not totally legal, of course. I had been in America working at hospitals before, so I had already a few credentials, but I didn't have the approval to work in Oregon as a doctor. So I needed to get that license, and I was studying, and the first time I went to Portland to make the test, I failed. So then the commune took a lot of, not pressure, but Osho came to Pythagoras to talk to me and to convince me that it was good. And then Devarash, he talked and we prepared for the test, and the second time I made it. So then I was appropriated to hospitals in Madras, which was the closest town, and also to the hospital at Bend, where I could treat patients from the ranch.
So you were not based in the ranch, but you were based in a kind of real hospital outside, and then the sannyasins were referred to you there?
Not really. We had a hospital, this Pythagoras Center, and there we also had an operating theater, which was totally equipped. We operated lots of people there. We also invited specialist doctors from Portland to work there. But the bigger operations, I operated on bowel affections or mastectomy cancer, I performed in Madras, in Redmond, which is in between, and in Bend.
Give us a sense of the daily activity in Pythagoras. Was it like busy, and what sorts of things that you were helping with?
Well, there were several phases. Like the first phase, it was very primitive, and more and more we increased, especially for the festivals. And the craziest it really was when the share home people were brought into the ranch. This was, what shall I say, at that time I was actually not really at the Pythagoras anymore, because I didn't like to work as a doctor anymore. So I was part of a crew which was working outside. We constructed dams to get more water on the ranch. So the little creeks were with dams were made so that water could be saved. Then I was only called for emergencies in those last 2 years.
Just something came to my mind in terms of HIV. We all know that HIV was a massive issue in the mid-80s when it came up, and the medical knowledge at the time was very limited, and there were fears that could spread through, you know, saliva, just, you know, touching people through sweat. So it was a big fear. There was a lot of fear. So as a doctor, what was your role in dealing with the HIV crisis at the time?
I didn't really have much to do with it. It was mainly a medical problem. But after the dam crew, I was also working in the hotel. And there the main thing was to get all these condom packages ready for the visitors of the hotel. And of course, in my personal sex life, this was something very strictly pushed, that everybody would really take condoms and even gloves. So things become a little bit awkward.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that. Let's jump again a few years ahead, when the experiment of Rajneeshpuram was over and you all, after the world tour of Osho, moved back to Pune for what is known as Pune 2. I think in a lecture or a public discourse of Osho 1987, he talked about you as a misfit, something known as the misfit lecture. I'd love to hear what Osho said about that.
Well, at that time, I was not really living in Pune. I just went for a visit. And it was kind of my last real connection to Osho. I asked him about not feeling comfortable in Pune. And if doing my own thing, content and full of gratitude, would be just another ego trip. Because I just didn't feel good at that time in Pune. I also was I was sick, and so I just didn't feel good. And his answer was very, very helpful to me. He said, that's all I want, that everyone is doing his own thing, and that's not an ego trip. But still, India, he said, is the most... The country where everybody can do his own thing, which of course, unfortunately, has changed a lot since. And he also mentioned, if you are not a lotus flower and just a marigold, that's okay, just be it.
That's very beautiful. This reminder of, you know, just accepting where we are and who we are without stressing too much about changing ourselves. I'd love to expand a bit more, if you can, on that part where you said that Osho invited you and everyone else to say, you know, that's what I want, just to do your things. And that said that India is the best country to do it, even though you said that things have changed. Can you explain a bit more?
Well, I have been to India since, and I went to see all the places where he was born. I also was in India before taking sannyas in the early 60s. And it's an incredible place to be for most of the people. But I guess for a Swiss who is used to a little bit of comfort, it's just not. So I don't feel to go to Pune anymore.
Okay, no, fair enough. But I think India is still the place, in my experience, where it's easier to go in and meditate. You know, there is definitely a vibe there that it's hard to find in other places. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, but I had twice, how you call this? It's a parasite of the bowel, which really made me very, very sick. And so it's just not from the hygienic standpoint up to what my body needs. So I can, I think anywhere where you are, meditation is possible. And my meditation right now is I like to hike. I go for hours up and down the hills and enjoy the nature. And that's my everyday meditation.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, whatever we are, we can go in if we tune in into ourselves. So that's beautiful. So if I understand correctly, after your experience in India, then you went back to Europe and you trained as a therapist. How did that come about? What was this call from your medical profession to become more of a psychotherapist?
Well, first it was my own life, my own needs. And I had done so many therapies. I spent a fortune or two for all those therapies. And I had the feeling I have something to give back from what I learned. And therefore, I didn't know. When I finished my work with therapy, I thought I had enough work. But I wanted to write a book to connect my experience with Osho, with meditation, with the official Western psychology, psychiatry. And therefore, I wrote a book.
Would you like to talk a bit more about the book?
Well, the book is called Liebe und Schmerz, Love and Pain. To me, that's the basic of all psychological therapy, in the way that we all lost what I call primary self, which is what we come at birth to it as primary self. And then through socialization, we get programmed and we turn into the what I call secondary self. And this is mainly mind, while the primary self is very much connected to the body. And through socialization, especially in the modern world, we turn more and more away from the body. We don't listen to the body anymore. We don't listen to our feelings. And we turn into the mind, what we call mindfuck. And unfortunately, that's how things go. And I claim in this book that pain has two sides. The main pain, of course, is a physical pain, which is also part of the primary self. And then more and more, the physical pain changes into psychic pain. And the worst of psychic pain is what in German we call Kränkung, which is just a mental pain because people don't see us the way we want to be seen. And because of this mental pain or psychic pain, we suffer tremendously, totally unnecessary. But officially, psychic pain is not even accepted. So I tried very hard in this book to convince the official psychology that psychic pain is an entity. But so far, I was not successful.
Well, it's going to take time, I think, for this concept to be accepted. So I guess, you know, your book might be a bestseller in 30, 50 years. You never know.
But there is a problem to that book, because when I dedicated the book, I not only dedicated it to people from the family and so on, but I also dedicated it to Osho, who opened the door to what I call Seinsliebe, being love, which I think is a basic. And because I put this into my book, the people from the printer, they didn't want to have that page in my book. They actually were ready to cut the book out just because Osho was mentioned. And it was just because of the editor himself, who I had good relation to, that this page remained in the book. That, of course, everybody who reads it can see that I am a sannyasin. And in the scientific world, this is not of much help.
Well, it's unfortunate, and I highly respect and honor your choice and being open with your love for Osho. And again, I think it will happen. You know, people, also the scientific community, at least some of them, eventually will understand and accept Osho. So respect to you for your choice to put Osho in the book, even though that didn't help your book flourish.
Yeah, but without him, I wouldn't have written the book, of course.
Okay, so let's talk about your present life. So what are your latest projects? What are you, if you have any? I mean, I guess, you know, apart from enjoying your hikes in nature, is there anything else that you would like to share?
Well, not. I don't have any big projects at my age. That's over. And I have my family. I have my wife, which is also sannyasin, Tashita. And I have my children and my ex-wife, which also is a sannyasin. And that's about it. So, my main thing is to sit quietly and look at whatever is and to enjoy my last years. That's it.
Now, that's a beautiful message. And I wish more and more people, as they age, they get that state of acceptance and just enjoying, you know, life at any stage. So we are heading towards the end of the show. I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, easy is right. That's what I got from Osho and from the Tao. So I just get up and mostly I go down and get the newspaper so I have some idea what's going on in the world. And then I prepare breakfast, or my wife prepares breakfast, and just easier. Of course, if I go hiking, I have to get up in time and go to the train, and because I live in Thun in the Bernese Oberland, and from there I have come very good train connections all the way around. So then I have to be on time. But usually I just do as I was told, doing my own thing.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
I have been doing endless dynamic and all the other meditations for years and years. Actually, we started in Zurich at the ETH in the 77s, where probably nobody knew what was happening there. But now that's over, and I just, sitting silently doing nothing, and the grass grows.
So the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
Well, that's becoming more and more just personal to me. I'm not only called a misfit by Osho, but I guess I just remain a misfit, which I don't have very connection to sannyasin. At some time I was connected with German centers, but more and more that they live a different life and I live my own life. So I withdraw, which I guess is very physical, natural at the age where I am going to the end now. Osho is my main connection. We read every day. I read a passage from Osho before we start breakfast. So I really think he was a genius, and I The funny thing is there are very little passages where I don't feel in consonance with him.
Okay. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast. I really enjoyed connecting with you. It's been a real pleasure, and I send you lots of love and a big hug.
Thank you very much, Swaram, and a big hug to you too. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Out Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveoutshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.